Please be seated. All right, we'll call our second case, Gomez versus State. If the clerk will please announce counsel.
May it please the court, Mr. Alan Steele for the state.
And thank everybody for their patience today. We were a little concerned that you might have been, there were wrecks downstairs, even a pedestrian apparently was hit. So when you leave, be careful leaving this building. All right, Mr. Steele.
May I please the court? My name is Alan Steele, and I have the privilege to be here today on behalf of Robert Gomez. We're here because Robert's doing 50 years in the penitentiary. But we're here on two basic issues today. One is the failure of the trial court to grant a continuance in this case so that counsel could complete a mitigation investigation that we believe was necessary and therefore denied Robert his due process rights.
Do we know what you didn't get a chance to do?
Your Honor, in one of the motions, the sworn motions I filed, it talks about some of the things. For example, I had subpoenaed the Institutional Division of the Texas Department of Criminal Justice for some of his prison records. They didn't have a chance to comply and get everything in. The court was advised that we were waiting on subpoenas that had been issued. Of course, they were also advised on the CPS issue, which is a separate issue presented before this court. Also, I advised the trial court that the expert had uncovered, or the mitigation expert I had retained, appointed by the court, had uncovered some information that maybe we might need to bring in a testifying expert on some type of syndrome. Sexual assault seemed to run rampant through the family. I think you can see that pretty clearly if you look through the trial transcript. And we believe that we needed to possibly consult with an expert on that case. We advised the trial court of that. We had the subpoenas outstanding still, and we only had 30 days to really get into the background of the defendant. And in a case like this where it's an aggravated sexual assault of a child case, juries obviously hate him. It gets the hair standing up on the back of everybody's neck. And in a case like that, you know, 30 days was just an unrealistic time frame.
I thought the 30 days came from you.
Well, what the motion said, Your Honor, was I had reason to believe that 30 days would be possible. There's some dispute about what was said in chambers over that motion. Our position on that is what the code says is a continuance shall be granted for whatever time is necessary. And it would be bad faith for me to go in and ask for huge chunks at a time, going, okay, well, eventually, you know, we'll get there. It is more responsible for me to go in and ask for small chunks of time, 30 days, okay, and I did my best to advise the trial court as soon as I realized 30 days wasn't going to be enough. And went to him and refiled that motion on, I believe, the 9th of July was when the next motion was actually filed in. But there were issues, and the trial court was aware of those issues. I did everything I could to make the trial court aware of those issues. The second reason we're here today, again, is because of the CPS records, some 5,000 pages approximately, that we had subpoenaed. Those records involve both Robert Gomez, his own children, his biological children, the complaining witnesses from this case, the mother from this case. There was a lot involved there. And the trial court determined that there was nothing in that volume that could be helpful to the defense, nothing favorable, nothing mitigating.
But in your brief, I don't find where you tell us what was in those 5,000 pages that you should have gotten before trial.
Well, and that's the position we're placed in by just not knowing. And
the box has been up here.
It was my understanding
since the clerk of the court sent it to us, and it's been sitting up there, and nobody's ever checked it out to go through it, or.
Well, it was my understanding from the clerk that the box was to remain sealed because the trial court had sealed it.
You asked to have it unsealed?
I did not file a motion to have it unsealed because it was my understanding that once the trial court sealed it, and that could be my mistake, and if so, I apologize for that.
Then how are we supposed to know what you didn't get that would have helped you at trial?
It's my understanding, again, that all the documents were sent up here for the court to review.
So we're supposed to go through the 5,000 pages rather than you go through them and tell us?
I'm glad to go through the 5,000.
We're supposed to guess at your trial strategy that would have known how to use these documents?
No, Your Honor. We argued at trial that we believe there were information or there were prior false allegations made by the child in question, the complaining witness in this case. We believe those are contained in there. We believe that there were statements made by Robert Gomez, by the defendant, during the investigation of his brothers involving his own children. We didn't have anything on that going into trial, other than to know from him, you know, hey, my rights have been terminated to my own kids. The DA had that information. He actually referred to it during the trial. I didn't have it. The trial court denied me access to it. Part of what came up during the course of trial was that his rights had been terminated for failure to protect his own children. We were looking, trying to find specific investigative facts and to get further information. We also believe that there was information on the lifestyle and the care of the complaining witnesses in this case, all the way through.
But this is all speculation, and you haven't shown us where it is. So, I mean, you're guessing, you're asking us to guess. If the records are up here, and there's a letter to you saying that if you need to use them, get permission of the court and come up here and look through them.
Well, the letter I got said that the records had been received. It didn't tell me I could come review them again. And when I asked for the records to be sent up, I asked for them to remain sealed. It was my understanding that they wouldn't be open because they are privileged and they needed an in-camera inspection. And that's
how much of this was in the state's file, because the record suggests that it was in the state's file and that they had an open file policy.
State did have an open file policy. You're talking about a box this big. It was not all there. And again, I was in a position at that time of not knowing, you know, what's there and what's not that was there, because I wasn't entitled to review it. And this is something the U.S. Supreme Court addressed in Ritchie. They talked about, you know, I'm in an impossible position of having to guess what's there, because the trial court supposedly or theoretically conducted an in-camera inspection. Now, there's some issue with that, and I don't want to take issue with the trial court or stamp on the trial court, but 5,000 pages, it took less than 48 hours to determine that there was absolutely nothing material, mitigating, nothing in that file.
Was this the portion of the records that were brought up on the actual day of trial, or are you now saying it was 2 days before trial?
No, Your Honor. What happened on the 17th, which was a week before trial, CPS responded with a file box full of records. On the late Friday afternoon before trial was to begin on that Monday, CPS contacted me and advised me that they had sent another envelope of records to the district attorney's office. He called me after hours. I advised the trial court on the record of that Monday morning. I think that was only about 108 pages. It was out of Johnson County. But the bulk of all this was provided to the trial court on the 17th. We had a pretrial hearing set at 9 o'clock on the 17th. The hearing was conducted. By 8 o'clock on the 19th, I was advised that I would not be given access to any of the information in those files.
The ones that were brought up on the day of trial?
The ones that were brought up on the 17th.
I thought those were the ones that were in the state's file.
No, those are not all in the state file. That's the bulk of this information. That's a bulk of 5,000 pages. The state's file was about that thick compared to a box.
No, but the 167 or 100 and...
Some of the records, whatever. Now, some of what we're talking about here relate to the actual complaining witness in this case. And those records were in the district attorney's files. We had those. We were looking for other information on these, well, on the witnesses, on their prior allegations.
So the rape exam was there.
The rape exam was there.
And her statement that her uncle tried to have sexual intercourse with her was there.
I believe believe that's, not to put too fine a point on the facts, her statements of what he said or what he did were there. Yes.
The one where he tried to have sexual intercourse, or her statement that he did have sexual?
To clarify,
yeah,
Robert's the one that made the statement that he tried to have sex with her.
No, there's a statement in those 100-something pages where she said he tried to.
Well, it kind of varied.
Is that in the state's file?
I believe it was, yes. The majority of her testimony throughout was that he did, in fact, sexually assault her. The majority of what she said. Now, granted, there's some waiver here and there. Okay, but yes, that was in the file. Not to put too fine a point on it. Robert's statements were on videotape, and those are, I think, well documented throughout as well. And that was his statement, was that he tried and failed, was unable to perform.
What are you asking us to do solely with respect to the records, not any other issues?
Your Honor, what I'm asking is that the court conduct an in-camera inspection. Again, review those records, actually give them a thorough review and see if anything was in fact there that should have been disclosed. And if there was something there that should have been disclosed, remand the case to the trial court, disclose the records, and give Robert a chance at a fair trial with a level playing field. And I understand the court's time is valuable.
Well, if, for example, there was one record, one page, does that mean that we're supposed to send it back for a new trial? There's got to be a little bit more of what you're reasonably asking for than us go through the record.
Right. Well, and again, of course, it comes back to the harm analysis, to how he was harmed. And the courts obviously would be able to determine that. I think it would depend on what the record was. You know, without knowing specifically what it is, I can't honestly answer that. But I think the court in that situation would be in a position to answer the question. And when we come down to the harm analysis, I mean, the most common response is going to be, okay, there is a videotaped statement by Robert Gomez here, and how do you overcome that? And I think that's a problem that we've dealt with, well, Dallas has dealt with more than anybody, but that we're dealing with is false confessions do happen. The state's investigator admitted that during the course of trial. The Supreme Court told us in Conley versus Colorado that confessions are highly prejudicial. And in effect, they end the trial because the trial ended when that statement was made. And so we would ask that the court not fall short and stop and just go, okay, there's a confession here or there's a statement here and therefore there can't be any harm. We would just ask that the court look at all the facts and make a determination based on that. I'm going to go ahead and give some of
my time. I'm still having a problem with your asking us to do your job.
Well, again, I would have been glad to do it months ago, a year ago. If it's available now, again, I'd love to do it now and maybe file a supplemental brief if the court would like. But it was my understanding that the records were to remain sealed because of the type of records that they were. And with that, I'll give my time back. Thank you.
Let me just go ahead. But quick, did you point out to the trial court that if the trial court sealed the records, there's no way for you to preserve error after the trial because you don't know what it is that you should have been able to look at?
Well, I believe that by having the record sealed and made a part of the record, which is something I specifically asked the trial court to do when they denied me access, I believe that did preserve error.
Asked the trial court to seal the record?
I asked the trial court to retain the records rather than send them back to CPS. I knew if those records went back to CPS, I would have absolutely no chance on appeal. So I did ask them to do
that. And you asked if the record be supplemented, right?
Yes, I did. And I asked
the record up here be supplemented with those
records? I asked that those records be retained, sealed, and sent up here. In hopes of getting them up here. I was concerned that if I had said, okay, will you give them to me now, the answer would have been, no, we wouldn't give them to you before, and we're not going to give them to you now. So I felt this was the fastest way to make sure that somebody had a chance to review what the trial court had to offer. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Steele. Mr. Christian.
First, I'd like to say that I was held up by a traffic accident, but I wasn't. And I think the first letter set us for 10:30, and the second letter moved us to 9, and I looked at the 10:30 letter, and I apologize. I think that the first major issue relating to the continuance is pretty well briefed and set out both positions in the appellate.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
If you're up before the judge in a hearing and the jury panel is out in the hall, and you find out there's new evidence, or you say I can't go to trial today, how do you prepare a written sworn motion for continuance with the judge on the bench?
I would. I would write it out longhand and go to the clerk and swear to it myself, or have someone swear to it and file it.
After the judge has already said we're not postponing it? I mean,
I don't know.
Curious about the mechanics of this.
Honestly, I don't know. I know that my judge would never grant the state's motion to continue at trial anyway, so I've never done that. But I have to think that. Thank the trial court. I would think you'd go something like this: Your Honor, I need to make a. Here's my written motion, and I would like a 5-second, 1-minute recess to swear to it or something. I mean, on the record, I think if the trial court said no, I'm not going to give you any time to swear to this motion, I think we might probably have some issue before the Court of Appeals to explain as to why it wasn't.
Do you think a lawyer could dictate it into the record and under oath, and that would be sufficient to have a written motion for continuance?
I don't know. I don't know if that would work or not. I know that some of the older lawyers I try cases with that have done a lot of civil work do a lot of dictating of motions into the record. But I've just never done that, but I've also seen them routinely write out an application for probation. That's something that is often forgotten. And
yellow pad motion.
I'm sorry. Yes.
Yellow pad motion.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, you're going to do the same thing you do if you're in another county and you see Judge Blackheart sitting on the bench. When you look back through the little window in the back of the courtroom, you write out by hand your objection to a signed judge and go find it, go file it, and go give it to him. I mean, you write it out.
I think that could be done. And that's the law. And of course, I did the research here, and I'll go ahead and talk about this continuance issue briefly. I think that the rule makes sense, but even that rule notwithstanding, and I think that the rules have been relaxed somewhat. For example, I think the rule at one time was that in order to preserve appeal, or preserve your point, you had to file a motion for a new trial. That's not the rule anymore. But I think that as a practical matter, I think that kind of still is the case, because in this case, there just is no way, I think, that an appellant and the status of this record can show that he was harmed by the denial of these motions for continuance. And it's just not there. I think we can guess and talk about what might have been available, or what this witness would have said, or what this mitigation expert that had 6 weeks to look at this case could have come up with, that she'd have had 6 more weeks to look at it, but that's just not what appellate courts do, and appellate attorneys do, is guess as to what the facts would have been.
Why don't you segue into him having to guess what was in the records?
All right. I want to talk about these records a little bit, because it is kind of confusing, I'm going to try to simplify this a little bit. First, there are two people that are not mentioned in the record, and one of the things that's a challenge as an appellate attorney in a small jurisdiction, I know more about these cases than I really should from the record, but there was Joe Gomez and Raymond Gomez, I think, but anyway, they were the defendant's brothers, and we had a big case where some other kids in this family were molested, and both of those men, I think they're both in prison. And one of these girls had a closed head injury and had a lot of foster care issues and that sort of thing. And there were reams and reams and reams of documents that related to that case. And I just kind of guessed on how many pages are in a ream and then measured it. That's how I came up with the 5,000 pages.
Now, have you seen what's in the 5,000 pages?
Yes, I have. Because I was...
Okay.
I have. And like Mr. Steele, I'm not sure if I was supposed to, but I did. I looked at those. Those records were not in the state's file, because according to me, and I still contend, they have nothing to do with this case. Now, there were CPS records generated as it related to what I would say is this case, this defendant, these victims, and those records were in the state's file. And I think that's to clarify, Justice Delfino, that issue of what was in the state's file and what wasn't. I contend that everything that was relevant was in the state's file. I have an open file policy.
Is that the 261 records that were produced at the last minute, or is that part of the 5,000, or is that something totally different?
Something completely different.
Totally different. Okay.
That was in my file before Mr. Steele ever was retained on this case in February of 2007. Now, relatively soon before trial, I think it was a month or weeks, there was this CPS came in, they had filed a motion to quash, and they brought this several boxes, or one great big box of records, 5,000 pages of records. And you guys, I know, have looked through CPS records before, and you know it takes CPS 20 pages to say something that, if they were more efficient with their space on the page, they could probably do in half a page. You know, they've got these headings and everything. And I just say that because it's relatively easy to go through those pages and figure out what these documents are pertaining to, you know, which victims, which point in time, which respondents, which parents. But the court went through those and said, no, there's nothing in there that's relevant to this case.
Suppose his defense had been it was another uncle. And then there are all these records that you've got another uncle who's doing this. The similarity of the words spoken and the actions would certainly be significant to the defense.
I don't know that that's what the defense was. And second, these records didn't really have anything to do with these victims, anybody involved in this case. I mean, these were people that...
His brothers.
And it really wasn't even connected at any point in time either.
What you're saying is we have different perpetrators and different victims.
At a different
neither
time.
The perpetrators nor the victims overlapped into this case.
No, and one reason why I can say that with some degree of confidence is that it's also very far removed in time. I believe that that case happened 8 years ago. Or so. I mean, a great deal of time before this case.
When did this case happen?
I think the allegation was 2004, I believe, in the indictment, and these allegations, I believe, were in the late 90s. So, you know.
So, if the defense was Uncle Joe or Uncle Raymond still at it?
Well, I believe they were in prison when this was alleged to have happened.
We don't know. We don't have those documents.
I would argue that the issue would be the trial court looked at these 5,000 pages, and I think that we have to presume, I think the law does, that Ritchie case presumes that the trial court knows what the trial court's doing, and that there's this abuse of discretion standard that has to be overcome to say that the judge was wrong when he went through.
How do we get there if he's not able to? I mean, we're supposed to do it. Otherwise, unless he's able to do it, how can he show there was an abuse of discretion? And it certainly seems like to me that he's the one that needs to see them to articulate how that could fit into some trial strategy, because otherwise we're having to get into his mind and take facts and apply it through some legal strategy that it would have worked at trial. And we don't know I just don't see how we could necessarily do that.
Well, I acknowledge that there are conflicting interests that the law is trying to protect here. And I agree that it seems to me that if we've had the trial court look at it, that it should be that there has to be some threshold that has to be met before that abuse of discretion is shown. I think that the appellant... I don't really have a problem so much with the defense lawyers having that stuff. I mean, if you're up to me, and know that I didn't have these records. I gave the records that I had over. I kind of wish in hindsight that I'd had all of them. You know, then he could have looked at them. But from the state's perspective, from the district attorney's perspective in Hood County, what I've got is a situation where someone is convicted of committing this crime and is where, of course, I think they need to be. And the trial court has conducted this in-camera inspection, and I just I think that I don't know how the appellant's going to overcome that. And I've looked at those records, and of course, in my opinion, he shouldn't. I mean, they just don't have anything to do with this case. And the case was tried, and anything to do with the defense or anything. Now, the additional 108 pages of records. The record is vague as to whether or not, it's silent as to whether or not the trial court reviewed these records that were produced the day of trial. And again, I've seen those records too. I would suggest that the rule would be that this body maybe does conduct a de novo review of those records to see if anything is...
Were any of those records turned over to the defense?
No, and I think they were kind of accidentally turned over to me, candidly. I went through and went into the clerk's office, didn't know that they were necessarily sealed, because I really didn't... I kind of forgot about these extra records.
So they were in the clerk's office. At what point were they in the clerk's office? After trial, before trial, during trial?
Well, I don't know. I know that they were there after trial when I saw them there.
So the rape exam never got to the defense?
Oh, the rape exam did. Everything that relates to this victim, the cook stuff, the stuff, all this happened at the outcry happened at Cook's, at the psychiatric ward. All the records that relate to this case, this victim, this investigation, whether it be...
So the 108 pages that's in the clerk's record, that does relate to this case, right? Or are they...
I would say no.
They don't relate to this case.
I would say they relate, and I can't remember the girl's name, I'm sorry, but there were two of them, and they were Robert Gomez's kids. And they relate to the foster care of this child and the CPS status review hearings, a lot of them. With these other defendants and other children, and candidly, I think I've laid it out in my brief. About a third of these documents are public record anyway. They're in the clerk's office in Johnson County.
Rape exam?
No. There are no rape exams in any of these cases. None. These are...
The clerk's record has a rape exam in it.
Well, if it does, it was not part of the CPS records. I'm not sure how that... I might have put it in there under a... to give the defense notice of an expert designation, or maybe I put in a... Maybe it was a business record affidavit that I did.
It was a business record affidavit with...
That's what it was. But that relates to this case. That really has nothing to do with the CPS records that are the subject of this subsequent point of error.
So... They're in an envelope someplace.
Right. But the rape exam that relates to these girls is just not part of the 5,000 records or the 108-page records that were produced the day of trial. Now, it may very well be referenced in some CPS records that were in my open file that related to these victims, but...
The bottom line is you're telling us that there are no records in the 5,000 or the 108 that have to do with Mr. Robert Moreno Gomez and the allegations against him concerning this matter.
That's correct. That is correct.
And let me clarify one other thing.
Yes.
But we know by virtue of the record that the trial judge did conduct an in-camera inspection of the 5,000 pages.
Yes.
We just don't know if the trial court had an opportunity to conduct an in-camera inspection of the 108 pages.
That's correct.
Okay.
And we're being asked to decide whether the trial court got it right.
I would say that you're, if I may answer your question, Judge, I think there are really two questions. One is, did the trial court abuse its discretion on the 5,000, which I think is going to be a very high hurdle for the appellant to overcome. And then, I think because the record isn't clear that the trial court judge looked at those 108 pages, I don't think I get the benefit of that abuse of discretion standard. And I think you probably, I think that because I did not make that clear and made sure that you knew that the trial court did look at it, then I think that I'm subject to a de novo review on those 108 pages, which I, of course, still think wouldn't change your mind about it either. So thank you very much, and I apologize for being late.
And so one more thing. You're telling us that everything involving this case was in your file?
Yes. And of course, the appellant here, in all fairness, is going to argue that, well, I'm not sure what he's going to argue. I think that the appellant is going to try to say that maybe some this sexual abuse syndrome thing, it makes these other kids in this other family part of this, but I'm telling you that, and you've asked me several times about a rape exam, mm-hmm. because that's in the record, but I want you to know that that's a different part of the records here,
okay.
and that really was in none of the CPS records, and everything that relates to these victims and this defendant was in the state's open file, including the CPS records that related to these victims and this defendant or this appellant. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Christian. Mr. Steele, rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I will keep it brief so that we can get out of here. Mr. Christian asserts that the trial court should be trusted, which I understand we have to kind of give them the benefit of the doubt to an extent. What I'm asking here is that someone has to review the trial court to make sure that they're not just going through the motions. I'm asking for the same thing that and forgive me, I know it's the Waco court, but what the Waco court did in Elams, where they reviewed civil service records that were found to be privileged, but also found that they should have been turned over to the defense. Again, privileged, they did a review. They found that some of the records under Brady should have been turned over. They weren't. Now, they did find that the conviction could still be upheld because there wasn't harm. But that's what we're asking for here. With regard to the continuance, I think that the main issue there is the continuance for mitigation. Under Miller versus Dretke, you know, what would a reasonable attorney do in investigating the background of this defendant? Now, they always look at that in ineffective assistance claims, and I know that this court has reviewed those in Jameson and in Height. I cannot pronounce that name for anything. But I know this court has reviewed ineffective assistance claims with regard to mitigation in Miller versus Dretke. The problem here is I felt I was being reasonable when I asked for additional time because a reasonable attorney would conduct more investigation. So it's kind of distinguished from those cases on that basis. And as for the oral motion for a continuance, I guess is what we're going to call it, that was really meant to be more of an amendment. I felt in the interest of judicial economy, it would be a waste of the court's time, a waste of paper, and as Mr. Christian pointed out, honestly futile because I knew he wasn't going to grant it anyway, to file another motion for a continuance when there was one pending before the court. It was the third motion. It was an amended motion to the one that was filed on the 19th. And I felt that we could basically handle it all under once just by doing an oral reform to it. I put into the record orally everything that would be contained in a sworn written motion for a continuance based on an absent witness and just combined it into my already sworn written motion for a continuance based on the mitigation information and the denial of the CPS records. So I'm not asking for a new rule there. I'm not saying, okay, you no longer have to file a written sworn motion. I think there's some issue on that in the brief that talks about, you know, the trial court's ability to grant such a motion. All I'm saying is I think in the interest of economy and, common sense, to be honest, it just didn't serve any useful purpose to go back and file another written motion when that one was still pending before the court to be heard that day.
Might have needed a continuance to file a continuance.
And then a continuance to file that one. Back to the mitigation issue, what we're talking about here is an investigation, not what evidence would have been presented. I know that's addressed in the state's brief. You know, what evidence do you have of what would have actually made it before the trial court? And that's not the standard here. Standard is what would an attorney have investigated, what would they have looked into? And that's what I was asking for. And so for all the reasons stated in the brief and talked about today, we just hope that you'll send us back to the trial court and give us a fair trial on a level playing field. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Steele. Mr. Christian, we appreciate your arguments and your briefing today. Your case is submitted, and if the clerk will now adjourn us.